It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful, if blustery and wet, downtown Kodiak, Alaska. It is 41 degrees. The rain is falling through the foggy mist. Out at the airport, they have east winds steady at 23, gusting to 31 miles per hour. They are down to 3 miles of visibility. And we have a flood advisory in effect through 3:30 p.m. tomorrow. Look for small stream flooding caused by excessive rainfall. Low-lying areas around Kodiak City, including Bell's Flats and coastal roadways connecting to Kodiak City, may be affected, especially during high tides. Coming up on the Midday Report, this year's conference for the Alaska chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution will be held here in Kodiak.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Opening statements are expected to begin next week in former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in New York for hush money payments. More on that shortly, but first, New York City police are investigating an incident in which a man walked into a park outside the courthouse and set himself on fire. In a press conference a short time ago, authorities identified the man as Maxwell Azzarello, a 37-year-old from St. Augustine, Florida. They say he's hospitalized in critical condition. Police say the man appeared to espouse conspiracy theories. They told reporters there's no evidence so far to suggest the man's actions had anything to do with Trump or any other particular person. But Police Chief Jeffrey Madry said security itself will come under review.
We're going to review our security protocols. This gentleman did not breach the security protocols. The park was open to the public. But of course, we're going to look at everything, and with the magnitude of what's going on around right here, we'll reassess our security with our federal partners.
Returning inside the court building, NPR's Jimena Bustillo has been covering Trump's trial. She says a full jury panel is now seated.
12 jurors and 6 alternates were selected out of about 300 potential jurors. The jurors come from all over Manhattan and will be deciding whether or not to unanimously convict the former president of 34 felony counts related to payments made to an adult film star. All have vowed that they can be fair and impartial, despite their differing opinions on Trump. Opening statements are set to begin on Monday, and the trial is expected to last 6 weeks.
That's NPR's Jimena Bustillo reporting. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says more air defense weapons will soon be headed to Ukraine. From Brussels, Terry Schultz reports the additional pledges came after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky asked NATO to hold an urgent meeting.
After a virtual meeting of the NATO-Ukraine Council, that means all 32 allies plus Ukraine, Secretary General Stoltenberg tells Kyiv that help is on the way.
NATO has mapped out existing capabilities across the alliance, and there are systems that can be made available. So expect new announcements on air defense capabilities for Ukraine soon.
Stoltenberg also says he expects there to be no restrictions placed on the weapons NATO members provide Ukraine for its self-defense.
That includes also striking legitimate military targets outside Ukraine.
This has been a sensitive issue for some NATO governments in the past. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
A $95 billion foreign aid package for Israel, Ukraine, and other security priorities is heading for a final vote this weekend. House Speaker Mike Johnson saw a series of bills clear a procedural hurdle today. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. This year's conference for the Alaska chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution will be held in Kodiak. That's a national society for women who are directly descended from a person involved in the American Revolution. The annual statewide conference rotates between five different cities where the organization's chapters are located. It hasn't been hosted on the island in several years. Sarah Heeb is the Alaska State Regent for the group. She says the organization focuses on three main things: education, historic preservation, and patriotism.
Overwhelmingly, we deal with veterans. We like to do anything patriotic with them, encouraging them, supporting them, volunteering, anything to do with that.
This will be many members' first time to Kodiak, including Heeb's. The national organization's president general in Washington, D.C. will be attending the conference, too.
So it's exciting to have her and our national chairperson for that committee to celebrate America will also be here. So it's an opportunity for all of us to get together and honor our patriots.
Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Scott Arndt sent a welcome letter to the organization. In the written statement, Arndt encouraged the visitors to, quote, explore our beautiful island by wandering through our museums and shops, visit historical landmarks, go for a nature walk, or stroll along the waterfront, end quote. The Daughters of the American Revolution Conference kicks off with a patriotic marker ceremony to acknowledge the upcoming 250th anniversary of the United States of America and to honor the country's patriots. The ceremony is open to the public and begins at Oscar Spit downtown at 4 p.m. today. Kodiak will see its first cruise ship of the 2024 season on Saturday. The Norwegian Jewel will kick off the season and bring nearly 2,400 tourists as well as about 1,000 crew members to our island community. The ship is operated by Norwegian Cruise Lines and measures 965 feet. That's longer than the city of Kodiak's Pier 2. The 2024 cruise season in Kodiak is starting a bit earlier than it did last year when the first ship arrived in early May. Alaska's Emerald Isle will see 22 ships this season, similar to the previous season. Two ships will be coming in 2 days in early May when the Viking Orion arrives on May 5th, with the Westerdam right behind on May 6th. The Viking Orion can hold up to 930 passengers, and the Westerdam can host up to 2,362 passengers at one time. The Westerdam was the first boat to port in Kodiak for last year's cruise season. The last boat of the season will arrive in mid-October. The Biden administration is making two big decisions this week that will block resource extraction in Alaska, and the state's U.S. senators are fuming. The Alaska senators and a flock of their Republican colleagues held a press conference on Thursday claiming that President Biden is boosting the mineral-rich countries like Russia and Venezuela while driving down American industry. Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke of it in global terms.
He is destabilizing our security as a nation in a way that most didn't think possible in such a short time period.
The decisions are expected to be announced today, but national news outlets have already spilled the beans. As the New York Times reported, the administration intends not to allow a road in northwest Alaska, the Ambler Road, that is crucial to the development of mining in the Ambler area. As reported by Bloomberg, the administration will adopt a rule to fortify environmental protections on sensitive areas of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, on the North Slope. Both Ambler and the NPRA have massive tracts of undeveloped land that are important to migrating birds, wildlife, and subsistence harvests. Environmental groups and indigenous opponents of drilling and mining are preparing their responses to celebrate the expected news, but the GOP senators aren't waiting for the official announcements. Murkowski says shutting down oil and mineral extraction in the U.S. will just drive the business overseas.
We'd rather take it from Iran, from Russia, and all the other places where they really don't care about us, and they love the fact that we're being crippled by our own administration.
Senator Dan Sullivan organized the Senate press conference. He says that he wants to get the word out because he thinks American voters won't tolerate the assaults on Alaska mining and drilling.
The most important thing we can do is retake the Senate, retake the White House. That's going to be the ultimate revenge here.
Sullivan says Congress could pass a resolution to overturn the environmental rule in the National Petroleum Reserve. President Biden would certainly veto that resolution, but Sullivan says if the rule is delayed a bit, that decision could be left to the next president. Governor Mike Dunleavy is warning that a Superior Court decision invalidating key parts of the state's homeschool program could have far-reaching impacts. But as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, others say it's not so clear.
In a 17th-floor conference room with a dominating view of downtown Anchorage, Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor laid out what he sees as the impact of a recent court ruling that threw out two laws underpinning the state's homeschool system.
In light of the vague, broad nature of the court's reasoning, it is very difficult to determine what type of program would actually be permitted under this decision, where, in fact, it draws into question spending that has taken place in public schools for decades.
One of the laws Anchorage Superior Court Judge Adolph Seaman found unconstitutional creates the framework for homeschool curriculum, so-called individual learning plans. The other statute provides cash payments known as allotments to homeschool parents who can use them for things like textbooks and materials. Plaintiffs told the judge that parents were using their allotments on private school classes. They argued that's a violation of the Alaska Constitution, which forbids using public money, quote, for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. Taylor and Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy say they're planning to appeal the ruling on an expedited basis to the Alaska Supreme Court. And Dunleavy says the ruling, if it stands, will have far-reaching consequences.
Part of the interpretation of the ruling that just occurred is that the homeschooling correspondence laws are thrown out. In other words, programs are gone, potentially.
But are they?
That is 1,000,000% false, and here's why.
Scott Kendall is an attorney representing the four plaintiffs who challenged the correspondence school allotment program after noting an uptick in private schools advertising that parents could pay tuition with state-funded allotments. He says he was frustrated watching the governor's news conference.
They kept repeating, the judge said correspondence schools are unconstitutional. We can't have this anymore. And that is fundamentally incorrect. The judge said, you have constructed the correspondence school statute in a way that's blatantly unconstitutional. I can't fix it. I'm not a legislator. I'm the court. The legislature can fix it.
And that's basically what the judge said in the final words of his ruling. Essentially, if the legislature thinks correspondence school allotments should exist, it should write a law that creates them without violating the Constitution. Senator Lukey Tobin, an Anchorage Democrat who chairs the Senate Education Committee, says correspondence schools existed before the 2014 law that Judge Zeman's ruling invalidates.
The rest of the authorizing regulation continues to exist even without those particular statutes. There may need to be some propagation of emergency regulation, or there may need to be some tweaks to some of our regulation, but we still have the ability to continue to operate correspondence programs for our homeschool parents.
Dunleavy, on the other hand, argues a favorable court decision or a constitutional amendment is necessary to make sure the correspondence program continues. The House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Republican Representative Sarah Vance of Homer, came out with its own proposed solution, a constitutional amendment that would remove the language about private and religious schools. The measure would need a two-thirds majority in both houses to advance to a public vote, though it's not clear that even a simple majority of the House would support it, and Senate leaders say they don't support spending on private or religious school classes. The judge's decision is likely to be put on hold at least through the end of June and perhaps longer. An appeal could take months or years to resolve. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Eric Stone.
NOAA Fisheries announced on Thursday that it will not be implementing strict new limits on Chinook salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. The agency that oversees federal management of fisheries in Alaska was responding to a January petition from Western Alaska communities asking for a total ban on Chinook bycatch in the large trawl fishery. NOAA regulators said in a statement that the, quote, petition did not meet criteria necessary for emergency action, close quote. Subsistence harvests and traditional practices are in jeopardy in many Western Alaska communities as Chinook salmon returns remain critically low in the region. Most scientists point to climate change and warming oceans as the main culprits, But the pollock fishery is also under scrutiny for the substantial number of salmon incidentally caught in trawl nets while targeting pollock. The pollock fishery currently has a cap on Chinook bycatch, but those asking for stricter limits say the restrictions don't go far enough. With another heavily restricted salmon fishing season just around the corner on the Kuskokwim River, state fisheries managers are not anticipating any drastic management changes from what was seen last year. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
According to Chuck Brazil, a regional fisheries management coordinator with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the forecast for Chinook or King salmon is in line with numbers over the past decade.
We're looking at a near recent average, which is about 120,000 to 140,000 fish. I would expect this upcoming season to look very similar to last season with, you know, limited openings, maybe one opening a week throughout the course of the Chinook salmon season.
Brazil oversees the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim region for Fish and Game. In 2023, the Chinook harvest for lower Kuskokwim River communities, the majority of which happens in June each year, was estimated at roughly 21,000 fish. That's according to the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, which has a co-stewardship agreement in place with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding management of Kuskokwim River salmon. Chum salmon follow close behind the Chinook that swim up the Kuskokwim River. This year's run is also not expected to deviate much from 2023, when the population saw a significant rebound but still remained far below the long-term average.
The chum run will start coming in, you know, about a quarter of the way through the Chinook salmon run. We do have some inclination that the chum run is probably going to be near average again next year, this upcoming season, and that's, you know, our hope.
As for sockeye or red salmon, around 900,000 of the fish passed Bethel last year, according to the Kuskokwim River Sonar Project. Brazil estimates the total harvest last year at roughly 58,000 fish and says this year could also be strong.
We see runs there historically on average between 500,000 and 900,000. And we think we're going to have about an average sockeye run this upcoming season. So there should be a lot of opportunity to get out, get some sockeye salmon to put up on the racks.
Brazil says the increasing use of dip nets to target sockeye salmon on the Kuskokwim River has proven to be an effective means of boosting the overall harvest while protecting Chinook and chum runs. As for coho or silver salmon, he says the fate of the end-of-summer Kuskokwim River run appears to be anyone's guess.
They can be up and down. I mean, you could have a poor run, and then that poor run can produce a really good run, so they're kind of unpredictable.
While in 2022, the Kuskokwim River sonar recorded the lowest coho run in decades, the run in 2023 hit nearly 380,000 fish.
This year we feel that, you know, it's going to be a near average run, and we expect to meet our goals, and there should be some harvest of coho salmon.
Brazil stresses that preseason forecasts only serve as general guidelines, and that final decisions regarding harvest opportunities can only be made as in-season data become available.
You know, the best possible outcome that I can see is that we make all escapement goals for the individual species within the river, and that we can provide plenty of subsistence opportunity so folks can get subsistence needs met.
Members of the public interested in providing input on salmon management are encouraged to attend meetings of the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group. The working group's first meeting of the year is scheduled to take place at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game offices in Bethel on May 28th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
The Alaska Independence Party just held its statewide convention in Fairbanks for the first time since 2008. As KUAC's Robin reports, a new board of directors wants to focus on getting party members to run for state offices.
The Alaska Independence Party has been able to hold a convention every 2 years. At last weekend's meeting, John Howe was elected chairman of the party that boasts 19,000 members in Alaska.
We are the third largest. We are the largest one outside of the Democrats and the Demlicans and Republicrats.
John Howe was one of the first to register in the party when it was formed in the 1970s. He has run for House seats, the U.S. congressional seat, and for governor under the AIP banner.
The big thing that we are working for, we want to get candidates on the party. And if anyone listening wants to run under the Alaskan Independence Party, the only party born in the state of Alaska.
Bert Williams was just elected party secretary.
He says the party's looking at state legislative races.
We don't really have any interest in more federal positions such as Senate or House of Representatives or the presidential election. And when the party was founded, Joe Vogler, he was very adamant for the party to be focused on the state.
The Alaska Independence Party was formed by Joe Vogler, who didn't like the way the Statehood Commission put Alaska in the Union in 1959. The AIP charter says they would like to have had a vote on other options. In 1973, Vogler started serious advocacy for secession, although Howe says the AIP's platform doesn't explicitly call for it.
And it is possible that we could achieve a level of independence and still be connected with the U.S., which Joe was not against being connected with the U.S. He just didn't want the oppression the way that it is currently set up.
At the state convention in Fairbanks, the party reinvigorated its platform, and Howe says they passed some new planks.
There's one that I like real well. Independence for every individual Alaskan is our goal, and must be executed by all peaceful and lawful means.
After the convention, the new board of directors also thanked former chair Bob Byrd, saying he organized party affairs after the unexpected death of the previous chair, Lynette Clark, who took over from Vogler. In addition to recruiting candidates for office, another focus for the party now is communication. They hope to launch a new website with the address AlaskanIndependence.party. Sometime this week. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And most Alaskans will have until May 15th to remove studded tires from their vehicles under state law after a deadline extension on Monday. Alaska Public Media reports that state public safety officials are pushing back the deadline for parts of the state above 60 degrees north latitude, including Anchorage, the interior, and northern Alaska. An emergency order cited the heavy winter snow that's still impacting roads. This year, Anchorage recorded its second largest seasonal snowfall. However, drivers in southern areas of the state, including the Alaska Peninsula, Aleutian Islands, and Southeast Alaska, and Kodiak, are still under their usual deadline, which was to remove studded tires last Monday.
The EPA designates forever chemicals as hazardous. I'm Nova Safa with a Marketplace Minute. The designation applies to chemicals called PFOA and PFOS. They're found in nonstick cookware, stain-resistant carpets, and other consumer products. While they've largely been phased out of use in recent years, they can still contaminate soil and water. The designations require manufacturers to pay for cleanup. Israel's credit rating took a hit today, a slight downgrade from Standard & Poor's, which cited tensions with Iran. The change could make borrowing more expensive for Israel's government. France is requiring many supermarkets to issue warnings for products that get smaller but cost the same or more. The country's finance minister called what's known as shrinkflation a scam. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 19th day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 6:46. It will set again at 9:31, giving us 14 hours and 45 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 64 degrees set in 1965, and our record low was 14 set in 1920. Currently 40 degrees in Kodiak. It's rainy, foggy, misty, and breezy. At the airport, they are showing northeast winds steady at 22 miles per hour, gusting to 36, and they have 3 miles of visibility. There is, until 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, a flood advisory in effect, especially around the areas surrounding the city of Kodiak. Small stream flooding caused by excessive rainfall is expected, and low-lying areas around Kodiak City, including Bell's Flats and coastal roadways, are expected to be affected. And that goes until 3:30 p.m. tomorrow. and also look for possible isolated landslides in areas of steep terrain. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up, and that is when that flooding is supposed to be possibly the most severe. Our high tide here on the east side just happened at 12:14 this afternoon, 6.8-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 6:36 this evening of 0.9 foot, followed by a high tide at 1:01 a.m. tonight of 7.1 feet here on the east side, where it might affect flooding. So right now and 1 o'clock in the morning are the times when flooding is most likely, at least the ones caused by tides. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 12:52 this afternoon and be 11 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:10 p.m. of 1.6 feet. And your high tide this evening will be at 1:27 a.m., 12.3-foot tide in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. East winds to 20 knots, except east 30 north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 13 feet. For tonight, variable 10, except east 30 north of Dangerous Cape. Diminishing to 20 knots after midnight with 7-foot seas, except 13 feet north of Dangerous Cape. For tomorrow, variable 10, except east 20 north of Dangerous Cape with 8-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for today, northeast winds to 35 knots, today seas to 12 feet. For tonight, east 30, 10-foot seas, subsiding to 6 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, northeast winds to 25 knots and seas to 7 feet in the Shelikof. The St. Herman Sisterhood Bake Sale is happening tomorrow. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Holy Resurrection Orthodox Cathedral. They will be having all of your favorites. That's tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., the much-anticipated St. Herman Sisterhood Bake Sale. And, of course, the Diamond Jubilee version of the Kodiak Arts Council's Arts and Adventure Auction is tomorrow. It's 21 and over. Tomorrow night at the Kodiak Marketplace, 6 p.m., tickets at the door are $25.
Where would you go? A pro baseball game? A Rolling Stones concert? A Broadway show? The lucky winner of KMXT's travel raffle will get to choose from three different packages that include a hotel stay, tickets to a concert, show, or game, and $1,100 of cold hard cash for your trip. Only 300 tickets were printed. Contact a KMXT board member or stop by the station at 620 Egan Way to pick up your tickets today. Tickets are $40 each, 2 for $75 or 3 for $100.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the April 19th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Woohoo-wee! What an introduction back to Kodiak weather. From the balmy 60s of Wisconsin to this, at least it isn't snowing. Another thing to be thankful for, we're not eagles sitting on a nest in this stuff. And they are out there. Check out your favorite nesting areas, and you'll likely see a white head sticking up over the edge of the nest. Spring is here. And while the weather outdoors may be crummy for the next few days, there are many indoor things to do this week. The Kodiak Spring Women's Show is Friday from 4 to 9 p.m. and Saturday from 10 to 4 p.m. in the Afognak Center on Near Island. The show features women-owned businesses and businesses for women. Saturday night is the Arts and Adventure Auction, celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Kodiak Arts Council and featuring a wide variety of arts and adventures for all budgets. The doors open at the Kodiak Marketplace at 6 p.m. and the Outcry Auction begins at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at kodiakarts.org or at the door. And then there's one of my favorites, the Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium, which starts with a keynote address about Kodiak's changing climate on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Marketplace. The symposium continues Wednesday and Thursday with a wide variety of presentations ranging from climate to fisheries and marine mammals, even archaeology and ornithology. The forum gives researchers and scientists an opportunity to share what they've learned with each other and with us, the public. Best of all, it's completely free to attend. Check out the full schedule at alaskaseagrant.org. Click on Events, and you'll see the symposium. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun, and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.